This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, producer Peyton, let's find out what is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So I think we're now at our plus 12 divided by 2 times pi. We're at 48 hours into the climate change town hall events on CNN. I fell asleep yesterday afternoon once it started, and I woke up this morning and it was still going on, it felt like. And they gave us a lot of content to work with. Now, we're not going to focus on most of them because, frankly, no one cares what Cory Booker has to say on anything, let alone climate change. But there did seem to be a major trend yesterday, which is to basically ban everything. It was ban this, ban that, ban this, ban that, over and over and over and over again. And you kind of wonder, like, who are they trying to talk to? Grabian.com put together a really nice supercut of all of the talk of banning things.
Would you support changing the dietary guidelines?
Yes.
You know, the food pyramid, what people are
saying. Yes.
To reduce red meat specifically.
Yes, I would.
Do you ban plastic straws?
I think we should. Yes.
So would you ban offshore drilling?
Yes.
Kamala Harris support anything that we're currently doing? We're going to start banning the overconsumption of meat because I guess they think the cow farts, and I'm not making this up, are bad for the environment. And of course, while they go ahead and do that, when they go ahead and say less meat consumption, they have no care whatsoever about the people's jobs dependent on that particular part of the agricultural industry.
Just today, the Trump administration announced plans to overturn requirements on energy-saving light bulbs. Would you reinstate those requirements?
If you can get electricity from a light bulb that utilizes one-tenth of the power that an old incandescent light bulb used, of course you're going to do that.
We have to take combustion engine vehicles off the road as rapidly as we can.
Educating everyone on the need to curb population growth seems a reasonable campaign to enact. Would you be courageous enough to discuss this issue and make it a key feature of a plan to address climate catastrophe?
Let's talk about offshore drilling for oil. Would you ban it?
Yes.
Would you ban offshore drilling?
Absolutely yes. We will transition off of fossil fuels, natural gas, coal, oil.
What about the export of fossil fuels from the United States? Would you ban that?
Absolutely, we must get to that point.
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking.
I'm in favor of a carbon-free America.
In my administration, we're not going to build any new nuclear power plants.
Okay, that's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show, 5:15, when Benji Backer stops by. He's the president and founder of the American Conservation Coalition. For some reason, people still are freaked out about nuclear power. Nuclear power is cost-effective. It is incredibly clean. It is very, 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 very efficient and even safer than it is efficient. They like to go and look at past instances of tragedies as a result, not of the nuclear power plant itself or the concept of it, but because of the bad functioning of the infrastructure that put it in place. Sorry, but I'm not going to Russia and saying, they're the pinnacle of what is supposed to be done with nuclear war or nuclear power. Yeah, let's just go there. Chernobyl is all about, we can't do it. And then, of course, you blame a tsunami that, you can do this very, very, very safely. It is one of the most safe, efficient, cost-effective ways to power our industries.
We should set out the rules for what kind of plant, coal-burning plants. No one's going to build another coal-burning. We've got to shut the ones down we have.
We're going to end factory farming because that is a danger to the environment.
And to the chickens? We need to save the chickens. The chickens should roam free. And in a Sanders administration, all of the chickens will roam free. And I know you think I have some kind of loyalty to my younger brother, Colonel Sanders, but I do not. He is a blight on our family tree.
And to climate change, there will be a transition. There will be a transition and there will be some pain there.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. There's going to be a lot of pain there. pain that I guess you're okay with. The pain that you're going to cause to millions and millions and millions of people in this country, all to pursue a goal that you're not going to end up ever attaining. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So soon you're going to be able to use your Orca cards on the monorail in downtown Seattle, which is a move that makes no sense whatsoever to me. Because, hey, you're going to be charged more for it. They're going to charge you $3 each way to ride what amounts to 1.8 miles of track, I think, that is very, very difficult to actually get to if you're around the Seattle Center. It would be competing with multiple bus lines that already go the exact same route, give or take a block, much cheaper, much faster, by the way. And, oh, you could just walk it, which takes you about 10 minutes. But yes, let's put it on an Orca card. And by the way, and this is what's maddening about this, because I remember talking about this last year or maybe even 2 years ago. The Seattle Times says the move to accept Orca cards comes 5 years after the council first requested a study of integrating monorail fare payment onto the Orca system as a condition in approving the 10-year agreement with its contractor that operates the monorail. Like, this is the one thing that you needed to get involved in before we'll allow you to keep going with the monorail. The monorail is a tourist trap. Normal people do not use the monorail unless it's free. And even then, what do I need to do it? It's not exciting. It used to be exciting, the idea of the monorail. Yes, I guess it was cool that one time Frasier decided to actually film in Seattle, and though not directly on the monorail, but there was a monorail scene, and I was like, oh, that's cool, look, our monorail is on. That's it. It goes nowhere. It has one stop, and it's only for tourists. And so you getting it onto an Orca system, where the chances are of a tourist having an Orca card are pretty much slim to none, doesn't make any sense to me. And by the way, it's still cheaper to get an UberX. If you were at the start point and the end point of the monorail rail. Makes no sense.
I'm a big fan of UberX.
Just take an UberX. It's at $3. You get at least air condition, and you get to go right to your... Although you do have to end up talking sometimes to the driver. And it's just
but
like,
they have Tootsie Rolls now.
No, I don't care about the stupid Tootsie Rolls. I don't eat that junk. Just the whole idea. Oh, how's your day? It's fine. What do you want? No, you know what? My day sucked. How about that? Driver, my day sucked. Can I tell you about all my problems? Yes. It's like, oh, but no, I can tell you all my problems. But first of all, this drive is only going to be 3.5 minutes. But number two, you're not going to have any context for any of the people that I complain about that I work with. Like, do you even know who Peyton is? And then do I really want to go into that? It's a big pain in the ass. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending?
There we go.
The homelessness crisis.
I have no idea why it was the homelessness crisis, but let's go into something that's sort of tangential. I suppose we can start giving people who are homeless a job. There's apparently a shortage of crossing guards out there, and my guess is because it's a job that seems incredibly boring, that comes with little to no respect at all, and really isn't necessarily as important as we want to pretend it is. Margaret McCauley of the Seattle School Traffic Safety Committee tells Cairo 7 there's a shortage of crossing guards.
We're quite concerned that number of vacant crossing guard positions is quite high, and that means that there are children who are asked to cross intersections that have been officially recognized as unsafe.
How about we get the parents involved a little bit more? How about we get, if a street is deemed unsafe, we can address it in a way that doesn't require a human being to be there. But if it does, why don't you reach out into the community and get people to volunteer their time in the morning? You don't need a crossing guard there all day. You need them during the morning and afternoon commutes. And so maybe there are people in the neighborhood who are looking to give back to the community who can say, yeah, you know what? I will do that. It sounds like a bad job, but you know what? One day every couple weeks, I'll volunteer. I'll take two Mondays, the first two Mondays of the month. They're mine. And you do that with a lot of people, and you get more people in the community engaged. This whole idea that you need to have these, like, such an old school way of keeping kids safe just is a little weird to me. And they're saying school officials hope to bump everything to $16 an hour to attract more applicants. And that was like, okay, $16 an hour? I mean, I guess that's good. It just seems like you're overpaying for something that's so unnecessary. Why don't you tell kids not to take the dangerous road? Is that too much? Okay, sorry. I'm just asking questions here. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. 465-8770. Let's get you home the right way with Right Way Traffic.
Southbound I-5 seeing delays as you make your way in towards the Steilacoom-DuPont Road due to a crash that's off to the right shoulder. You'll see slow traffic from Lakewood. Southbound I-5 easing up coming into Tacoma. Still a little thick right at Federal Way in the Fife Curves. We did have an earlier incident right at City Center that's clear to the roadway. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. You're listening to AM 770 KTTH.
You can follow me on Instagram if you would like, and I think you should do it because I'm gorgeous. In fact, this entire show unit, everyone on KTTH, best looking radio professionals in all of Washington State. And it's been certified by Harvard. Harvard spelled with an H and a U, but it's been certified. And you can go behind the scenes, see what it is we look like. Head on over to your Instagram app, add the screen name Jason Rantz, JasonRantz. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
King County Executive Dow Constantine and Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin announced yesterday new legislation to form a regional homeless authority. It feels like a plan we've talked about for years, and it feels like we've already done these announcements, but apparently we're doing them again. It doesn't seem like a particularly good idea, in my opinion, and that's a position that's shared by my next guest, King County Councilman Reagan Dunn. Councilmember, thank you so much for coming on.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
So why are you opposed? Because I've got a whole list of reasons.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. But first of all, we don't need a new layer of government to solve the problems that our duly elected officials, if they had any courage, could solve. And as you probably know, Seattle has the highest per capita homeless rate of any city in the United States. And you know why that is? Because we have failed policies.
Yeah.
They're not working. And so what they want to do is put a Seattle-centric steering committee together of 6 out of the 7 members who will then appoint an 11-member board of experts who aren't elected by the people, who aren't accountable to anybody, who will then implement more of Seattle's failed homeless policies, this time across the entire county.
Yeah, and that for you in particular, obviously, a problem in Maple Valley or Renton or Enumclaw is not sure. Necessarily a Seattle issue, and it requires a different look.
Yeah, it does, exactly. Yeah, homelessness is not a one-size-fits-all a problem, and it's different in every community. But we know statistically that 52% of all of our homeless are living inside the city of Seattle, largely as a result of their failed policies. Certainly we have homeless problems throughout our communities in King County, in my district, from Bellevue to the edge of Yakima County. We have homeless folks that live in RVs and campers in the woods, in the streets, and all over the place. And so, you know, it's a challenge, but the idea of unifying a new level of government behind a Seattle-centric commanded homelessness policy that it'll drain the tax dollars out of the suburbs and into Seattle is something that really concerns me a great deal.
And what is particularly concerning to your point, you've got this board of experts who are not elected but appointed by other ideologues, presumably because they mirror the ideological perspectives of the people who appoint them. And so rather than talk about what actually works, and there are programs out there like what's being done in Marysville and Arlington that work, instead we'll be talking about heroin injection sites.
Well, you know, I just had a debate on NPR. The United Way director of homeless policy said that, you know, she's looking forward to using this board as a way to raise taxes, essentially, is what she said. And so, you know, and what happens is you get all of these wonderful service providers. They have good hearts, but what they want to do is they want to increase their production of services. So they want to increase. We help 31% more people than we did the year before. But that isn't the metric of success. The metric is how many people are sleeping on our streets every night that are homeless. And what we're seeing in terms of statistics are staggering. And so, you know, when you put nonprofits in charge of it, when you put the Seattle politicians in charge of it, it really worries me a lot. And, you know, if we are going to adopt the homeless government, which I personally think it's probably going to fail ultimately, at least at the county council, if you're going to do it, you got to do it in a way that properly reflects the different views of the county. And, you know, I can tell you, because of my district, it's very different from Enumclaw to Maple Valley to Bellevue to Seattle in terms of how people view the issue.
Is King County Executive Constantine just giving in to Seattle pressure? Is he more involved in Seattle issues than he needs to be?
Yeah, that was what really concerns me at first. I thought Dow should have stayed out of a marriage between King County and Seattle on the issue of homelessness, and instead Dow should have put together a group, all 38 cities in King County plus Seattle, the 39 cities total, plus the unincorporated area residents, got together for the first ever all-elected homelessness conference in county history and talked about how best to work this out. Instead, we're going to be led by the nose by some folks in downtown Seattle who do not ever want to see a tough love strategy. They want to make the homeless folks as comfortable as possible in Seattle. And you know why that's concerned me? Because the one-night count shows that fully 45%, nearly half, of our homeless people have lived in King County 4 years or less. They are coming from out of state. They are coming from outside the county. And they're coming here because of the services that are provided. And so we got to be very careful that the policies we put together are doing more to attract out-of-state homelessness mm-hmm. than they are to solve our domestic problem.
And we say this on the show all the time. Bad policies of Seattle spread. They get into Bellevue. They get into Renton. They get into Tacoma and Olympia. They spread all across the region. And then, of course, cities wake up and realize they've got the same problems that Seattle has because of Seattle. And one big issue is Dan Satterberg. Is there any pressure being put on the King County prosecutor to actually start doing his job and putting prolific, homeless offenders actually in jail or in some sort of treatment that they're going to actually follow up on?
Well, you know, it's an interesting point. You know, Dan and I have been friends for years and years. And I will tell you, I don't think he's making the right call in terms of not prosecuting some of these petty offenses. But in his defense, we don't have any beds for treatment for addiction and recovery. If we had more, like, for example, the Salvation Army just closed last month. Another major facility closed at the beginning of the summer. And so, you know, if we had the beds, for example, for treatment for these folks or better mental health services, which nobody's talking about, and oh, by the way, which this commission wouldn't address, key issues besides housing. If we had those available, then I think you could use the power of the prosecutor to prosecute some of these folks on the streets who are really committing some pretty serious crimes. And in some cases, like forcible treatment. I mean, the judge will require the individual go to substance abuse treatment. You know, and that doesn't work all the time, but it works sometimes. And when you get somebody sober, take it from me, it can make a big difference in their life.
We've been talking with King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really do appreciate your perspective on this.
You bet. Glad to be on. Thank you.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Jason's world?
So the Tukwila Teachers Union just announced that they have a tentative agreement with the Tukwila School District. And it's happening in my world because I want it to be known what's going to happen in the future as a result of this. I'm going to take full ownership of this. This is going to be all on me and I'm making this about me. In fact, pull out the Jason Tells the Future notebook filled to the... And I think we've got, two more pages left? Just all of my actual predictions. Put this down on page 713. Let it be known on September 5th, 4:23 in the afternoon. The Tukwila Teachers Union announced that they've got this agreement. They're going to get some extra money. And exactly a year from now, we're going to hear two things. Tukwila is going to say that actually we are running out of funds and so we have to have layoffs. And at the same time, concurrently, the teachers union will come back out and still demand more money. Put that down. Write it down.
It's down.
Yeah, but use the good pen, not the one that. Yeah, use that one. Thank you. I guarantee you that that's what's going to happen. This is what always happens. Members voted last week to go on strike tomorrow if there wasn't a new deal. So they have come to a tentative agreement. Right now, we haven't seen anybody late to get into the classroom. They've taken the kids the way they're supposed to. They started on time. Our expectation is it's going to start on time tomorrow. Yet we don't have any of the details specifically as to what they are now going to make, assuming this gets voted in by the general teachers union in Tukwila. So we'll see what ends up happening. They're almost certainly going to see like a 5 to 8% increase in pay. That's what this was always about. They look at some of the other districts around the neighborhood, and they're like, oh, they're getting paid more. Yeah, you also live in Tukwila, where the cost of living is much, 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 much lower than what it's like in Seattle. But again, they know they don't have the money. They're going to go ahead and do this anyway because these teachers are able to hold your kids hostage, and then we'll do the same exact thing a year from now. The exact same story a year from now. Did you write it down? Get it notarized, that so people realize that we don't lie.
I'll take it to like the courthouse right now and get it notarized.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a notary republic, I think, just a few blocks away.
Okay. On the way. Whole book? Get it? Just that one
page? No, just that one page. I don't think they can do it now for the whole book. But everything else in there that I predicted, 100% true. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-877.
From the Online Trading Academy studio, this is AM 770 KTTH.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. It means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. The concept, very simple to understand. The media here is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. They spend most of their time talking about Seattle stories, and they end up ignoring you. So we do the opposite. We ignore Seattle, and we talk about the communities that you live in. And we start with the story of the Defense Department deciding to divert funds, about $89 million, to the Pier Project at Naval Base Kitsap in Bangor. And it's all to help build a $3.6 billion fence or wall or barrier or whatever it is we want to call it along the U.S. border with Mexico.
I mean, the Pentagon asked for this money, put it in place, so to just take it away will clearly impact the readiness of our force.
So that's Congressman Adam Smith. He's the Democrat from the city that we don't talk about, but also Bellevue. He told our sister station, Cairo Radio, that this is all bad news for the military.
It's going to make our force less ready to do its job. Because if you're talking about a pier, well, that's so that our ships can get in and get the repairs they need so that they're mission ready.
So one of 127 military construction projects in 23 states, this is one of 127 of these projects that's going to get hit. Three U.S. territories and 20 countries will all now lose funding. Paul Rykoff is the founder of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, and he talked with CNN. He said, look, this is not good for the bigger picture of military readiness.
Well, that's not what the money was authorized for. There's plenty of ways to pay for a wall, and you can do it without raiding the Pentagon. It's not the Pentagon budget is not a political piggy bank that you can shatter when you want to fund a political project. This money was authorized for other things by Congress in a bipartisan way. So it's outrageous, it's unprecedented, and it's bad for our national security and bad for our troops. These are construction projects that would have been funded, that money is now going to go toward the wall. And let's put this in real-time perspective. There are military bases in Savannah, Georgia, Hunter Army Airfield, Fort Benning, Fort Stewart. Those are going to get hit by this hurricane, and they're going to need construction costs. And they're not going to have them because the money is instead going toward the border wall. So this is really politicization of our troops and the military at its worst, and it's really just bad for everybody.
Now, I don't know if it's at its worst, but here's just some general thoughts about this, because I do think that there is absolute validity to claim that now in Kitsap County, at least in this particular case, this project is going to be felt. The numbers coming away from the budget, it will be felt. Number one, bad calculation for Donald Trump to say Mexico would pay for the border. That was a bad calculation. It was smart at the time, strategically, because it caught on, people were talking about it, but he would have had to have known at the time that that's not an easy thing to get another country to do, certainly Mexico. However, pushing that aside, this is kind of a smart financial strategy. It is. Because now Dems won't be able to say no when the Trump administration comes back and tries to get the money that it's now diverting to the border. Right now, Democrats are not going to put money on the border. Not for a wall. They've all come out and said that. Certainly here in Washington State. All the congresspeople, all of the senators, they've all said, the Democrats have all said, no, we're not going to put a penny towards that. Okay. Well, now we get the money going to the border, right? We've got billions of dollars now being diverted to the border. It does leave an opening in the budget for these projects from the military. Well, all the president needs to do now, or any Republican needs to do now, is come up with a plan to fund, to put some money into this now big hole. And there's not going to be a single Democrat who's now screaming about how bad this is, how dangerous it is. Military readiness is on the line. No one is going to be able to say, oh, well, I guess I'm not going to make up for the money. So Republicans just need to get the money now somewhere else. And it should be, in theory, an easy bill to pass, an easy budget to pass, because all the Democrats now are on the record. Adam Smith, do you think he's going to be able to come out and say, oh, well, no, I'm not going to be able to support any bill that would put more money into our military? Why? You just said that it impacts readiness. Derek Kilmer, you just said that it impacts readiness. Rick Larson, you just said, like, all you have to do is throw that out there. And it should be an easy way to get the money back. So Trump gets the money for the border. Ultimately, the Pentagon doesn't lose any of the funding. So in theory, this was actually smart strategically, from a financial strategy perspective, at least. Meanwhile, soon you're going to be voting on Initiative 976. It's Tim Iman's ballot initiative to bring back the $30 car tab fee. I'm a supporter of it. It limits all car licensing fees to $30 unless voters approve it to go higher on a one-off basis for specific projects. Now, last night, the Everett City Council endorsed a no vote, which, by the way, shout out to Michael, who sent us this from myeverettnews.com. He sent it to us via email. And by the way, any of you, if you ever see any stories that are important that you think I might miss, feel free to reach out to us and send us a link. It was a unanimous decision in the Everett City Council's case, though Councilmember Jeff Moore was absent. Now, 976 is freaking out a whole bunch of people. It's panicking Sound Transit. It's panicking city agencies and local government groups like the Everett City Council, because they want to do Sound Transit's bidding. They want to keep investing in projects that end up going over the timeline and over budget, because ultimately they view this as a means to get people out of cars. They are anti-car. They have no plan to go ahead and tackle the cars that are on the road now, so the only thing they can do is try to force you out of their cars. Now, according to My Everett News, they say they passed the unanimous resolution saying it would cause extreme harm to the development and maintenance of the city of Everett's transportation infrastructure, thereby jeopardizing economic growth and quality of life in Everett, Washington, and throughout the region. They're basically saying you're not going to be able to pass any of these major projects anymore because you're not giving them enough money to complete them. With all due respect to the Everett City Council, Everett has grown really, really, really well without any Sound Transit projects that are meaningful. They've been able to flourish. They've been able to attract new people living and moving into the area. Everett is going to be fine. The reason why a lot of people know that 976 has a shot at passing is because the last time we voted on ST3, Sound Transit decided to lie to us about how they were going to evaluate your car using an old calculation, taking more money out of you for older cars than they otherwise should. They lied to you about it. They flat out lied. And as a result, a lot of people got sticker shock when they looked at their car tab fees for an older car that's 20 years old. They're like, wait, what? How much? Why do I owe this much? Because they're using old calculation algorithms. It's nonsense. And as a result, this is what happens. You abused us over and over and over again, Sound Transit, and all of the Sound Transit enablers. They abused us. They underdeliver on projects. And this is the result. You've done this to yourself. And then finally, the Herald reports that two former leaders of the Snohomish Health District each were given 3 months of severance pay when they abruptly resigned back in June. Now, I want to focus on one of them, Health Officer Dr. Mark Beattie. He left his job through an involuntary resignation in lieu of termination, meaning you're going to resign or we're going to have to fire you. This all according to documents that were obtained by the Daily Herald. Now, they don't know exactly what led to this person's resignation. He's been in this job for about 2 years, maybe a little under 2 years. However, Dr. Beattie ends up getting a severance package worth $49,000 over a three-month period. $49,000 in taxpayer severance to this individual. And no one is telling us why. No one is telling us why they forced him to be put out of this job. Now, here is my guess. He was bad at what it was he was doing. That's my guess. I don't think there was any nefarious intent. on the part of the Snohomish Health District. I think they probably said, you know what, let's do what's best for our community that we're serving. Let's get rid of this guy. He's not really good at what he's doing. Now, I tried to reach out to Dr. Beatty, but his number was disconnected, at least the number that we were able to find, so I wasn't able to talk to him. I get that when you do these types of things, you have to keep it private because it's a personnel issue. You've gone into a contract of sorts to not disclose any of the pertinent details. But if he was forced out, which was basically like being fired, you're giving him a golden parachute of $49,000, which is ridiculous. You're not putting it out there on the public record why you're forcing him out, which means he could get another job with another government agency and do the exact type of behavior that led to you forcing him out to begin with. And number three, it is our tax dollars. We should have a right to know. Now, I reached out to County Council member Nate Nehring, friend of the show, really good guy, and I'll print out his full statement up on KTTH.com when I publish a blog on this topic. He said, in part, the unfortunate reality is that in this era of litigation, it's oftentimes less costly to the taxpayer to approve severance packages than it is to go down the path of litigation. So reading between the lines, it sounds like, hey, when we go ahead and terminate an employee, they probably will sue because it's already very, very difficult to get fired because of all the protections to government employees. It'd be more expensive to fight that person in court, especially if that person ends up winning, than it is to just give them a severance package. So financially, I totally understand that. But it's still maddening. It's still absolutely maddening. Because this is a guy who they deemed not sufficiently qualified to finish the tenure that they had in mind when they hired him two-ish years ago. And we should have the right to know. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. Text us on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Really appreciate you tuning in. We're live in the Online Trading Academy studio. The founder of one of the nation's largest conversion therapy programs has announced that he's gay. This is the least shocking news I've ever heard. This is not shocking at all. Gay conversion therapy does not work. We are born gay the same way you are born straight. And the only thing that comes out of this kind of quote-unquote therapy, a program like this, dangerous self-loathing, and you're just simply miserable. Although, to be fair, I'm miserable now, and I didn't go through any of the conversion therapy, but still. And it's not just that you're going to be miserable pretending to be sexually interested in someone that you're not. Think about the lives you're ruining when you're pretending to be interested in people you end up dating or end up getting married to when you're really gay. Conversion therapy does not work. This guy's name is McCray Game, and he spoke to The Post and Courier.
When I started Truth Ministry...
And by the way, I can say this and not get in trouble, so no one else should say this. Perhaps it's my inner gaydar. The dude is clearly gay. He's clearly gay. I love women. Like, come on. Just own it. You'll be so much happier. I'm glad he's now back out of the closet. Did he go back in? I don't know.
But I believed the gay community was, and the world was lying about homosexuality. And this whole subject, I just felt like it was a big ruse, and there was a lot of deceit. And I was trying to, tell the truth. But now, I think it's the complete opposite. I believe ex-gay ministry is a lie. Conversion therapy is not just a lie, but it's very harmful.
Yes. It's incredibly harmful. It's incredibly dangerous. It ruins people's lives. It's based, I think, in bigotry or a complete and utter lack of understanding of sexual orientation. There are people who still hold on to that belief. In some cases, I think there is bigoted intent. In other cases, I think it's just ignorance. But the people who believe conversion therapy actually works, I defy you to find someone who you truly believe, after talking with, are somehow no longer gay. They are pretending. It is why it is banned in 18 states. Now, I'm a little bit on the fence when it comes to banning types of therapy, even though I think this therapy is dangerous. But if you're someone who is an adult, if you are over the age of 18, it should probably be your right to engage in this kind of foolish and dangerous therapy. You should have that right. The information is out there. We should all do our best to put a spotlight on it. But if this is what you're choosing to do to yourself, you should be able to choose to do that to yourself. Kids, no, not at all. We got a text at the 206. Gaydar is a real thing. It 100% is. I can spot. I have Judar. If you're Jewish, you know who other people are when they're Jewish. And if you're gay, generally speaking, you know who other people are gay. Since we have a couple minutes of time, can I make this about me? You know, Producer Peyton, you already know. I don't like to talk about myself. Like, if you twist my arm enough, then okay, fine, I'll talk about it. But, you know, I don't like to do that.
You hate it.
It makes me uncomfortable. I'm a humble, brilliant, witty, smart person. It's just kind of weird. However, I have to call out the Everett Herald because they have a stupid story up on their website right now. And it's stupid because, number one, there's some factual inaccuracies in the piece, or at least one that's just glaring. But remember how we talked about Greg Banks, the Island County prosecutor, and how he had a whole bunch of anti-Trump tweets or Facebook posts up, like to an unhinged degree, and he apologized, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I wrote about it. I talked about it twice on this show. I was on our sister station. I talked about it once. This is the title of their story covering this issue. A prosecutor's anti-Trump post anger talk radio hosts.
Is that you?
Well, first of all, they say hosts. It's just one. I'm one person. Number two, they talk about it. They say this is a direct quote from the story. Earlier this month, conservative talk show host Jason Rantz contacted the Island County prosecutor and questioned him about his personal Facebook page. Then it goes on later on to say, Rantz's commentary about Banks, a Democrat, appeared on MyNorthwest.com, the website for Cairo, KTTH, and 710 ESPN Seattle. The column was discussed during the popular Tom and Curly show on Cairo Radio. So when you talk about Tom and Curly, a show that I was on talking about my story, you call that a popular radio show. But you refer to me simply as a conservative talk show host. You don't mention that I even work on KTTH directly. You don't say anything about it. You say when Tom and Curly are on in the morning. You don't even say I'm on in afternoons. This is how that weird kind of bias works. It's like, I'm a conservative talk show. Okay, fine. On KTTH. You're only talking about this story because I reported on it. So you should be thanking me. And number 12 on my list of grievances, the story is not about me being angry. If that's what you want to start doing, I've got a whole bunch of stuff for you to write about because I'm angry every single day. I've got a laundry list that Peyton keeps in his studio. It's already filling up an entire locker. We've got the material if you want to reach out to us, and you can write some more stuff as long as you give us the promotion. It's a Jason Rantz Show.